Monster Man, Episode 250, Solo Fugid, and Spectator. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're taking a look at two more monsters from the S chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. But before we do that, it's time for me to thank a new sponsor. Yes, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if, like today's patron, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I talk about the Deities and Demigods supplement and how to use the gods and mythological beings in it in your fantasy RPGs. We're currently doing a series on Native American mythology, and I just did an episode about the Haudenosaunee thunder deity Hino, and also the legendary statesman Hiawatha. So I thought that was pretty interesting, and if you become a patron at the $2 level, you'll be able to check that out. So thank you very much to our newest patron, Henry Jones. Henry, I really appreciate your support. Thank you. Our first monster for today is the Solifugid. Now, this is a little bit like the pseudoscorpions that we talked about earlier, and I wonder if somebody got, like, the big book of arthropods for Christmas, or whether this was just a decision to sort of expand the range of giant arthropods beyond mere spiders, because like pseudoscorpions or whip scorpions or vinegaroons, or they're actually called the pedipalps in this book. But, you know, no matter what you call them, what they are is another species of arthropod that aren't quite spiders and aren't quite scorpions. And the same is true of the Solifugids. They're commonly also called camel spiders, and they enjoyed a brief internet celebrity in kind of the early to mid-2000s. I wonder if it was a thing about the war in Iraq. All these kinds of, like, legends came up about camel spiders, because I do believe that they're native to desert biomes. Camel spiders are actually completely harmless. There's maybe one recorded instance of someone kind of getting a rash after he was bit by a camel spider, but they're not venomous. They're not really big enough to be dangerous. The largest ones are, you know, about 6 inches or so across them, which is pretty big for a spider or an arthropod, but not, you know, gigantic, and that's counting the legs. What Solifugids have going for them is that they look completely horrible. Like a lot of good animal monsters, it's all about the appearance. And most distinctive feature is their chelicerae, if that's the correct name. They have very large, kind of robustly developed fangs, as it were. And so they look really big and menacing. And in fact, the Solifugid, the giant versions, have this mechanic where they grab you, and if they hit you with the front feet, it actually doesn't do any damage at all, but it does give them a bonus to their bite attack, which is kind of neat. I wonder if there are... One of the things that makes creatures like the pedipalp or the Solifugid less interesting as monsters for D&D, at least for me, because I use a lot of miniatures in my games, is that I'm far less likely to have a miniature for them. So I can go into, you know, a supermarket, if I do it at the right time of year, and I can get, you know, a pack of plastic spiders for a pound. And it so happens that I have a giant flea miniature just for whatever reason. But I don't know that I'm ever going to find, like, good toys of the pedipalp or the Solifugid, unless they're intended to appeal to some kind of, like, collector's market, and therefore they're expensive and spoil the whole purpose. I think if you did have a life-size toy of a Solifugid, you could definitely use it as a model for a giant one in your D&D game. So I think they work. I think you can, you know, put them in the same way as a giant spider, but just they kind of add a little more variety. They don't have any of the sort of things that we associate iconically with spiders, like venom or spinning webs. I mean, there are spider species that don't have venom that's harmful to humans. Indeed, most species don't. There are spider species that don't spin webs at all, but if you find a creature, you know, if you're fighting a spider and it doesn't do either of those things, you're actually kind of disappointed, I guess. Anyway, so the Solifugid, it feels a little bit like the pedipalp. It feels a little bit like documenting every possible species of arthropod. But on the other hand, it's fine, so, you know, I got nothing against it. Next up, we have the Spectator. Y'all know the Spectator. It's like a beholder, but it's got four eye stalks and then the one central eye. Here's an indicator of how much I knew or cared about The Spectator prior to this, I did not even know that spectators are not a smaller form of beholder, right? I thought they were just a kind of related species. A long time ago, long before I even really played D&D, listener and Patreon backer and friend Ted Perdomo, hi Ted, ran a role-playing game where we all played beholders. It was kind of making fun of, you know, the play the monster genre, like Vampire the Masquerade or whatever, which everyone who played at that table heartily played, but we were still having a little bit of a goof about it. And around the same time, SciPlus, American Science and Surplus, used to sell five old D&D books for like $5, right? They just had a big assortment of unsold D&D inventory. Maybe from when TSR went bankrupt, I don't really know. But anyway, one of the books that I got was a book called I, Tyrant. At least I think that's where I got it. I don't know where else I would have got it. And it was a book all about beholders, and it just had like a bunch of foolery in there, like a suit of armor that beholders built that had a big, like, scoop neck bit so they could plunk their big round bodies into it. It just looked ridiculous. And I felt like the beholders didn't really need that much elaboration. And I always assumed that the spectator was part of that kind of thing, but actually it's completely different. Well, not completely. You use beholder bits to summon a spectator, but then you assign it to guard some treasure, and it can stay down in your vault for basically eternity, or like 101 years, I think is how long the spell lasts, because one of its eyes is a create food and water ray. And unlike the beholder's central eye, which nullifies magic spells, the spectator's actually reflects them, which is pretty good too. My favorite thing about the spectator is actually kind of its personality, which is that spectators are assigned to this task, right? They're magically bound to protect a particular treasure. But they're quite literal about that. So for instance, if a wizard summons a spectator and binds it to protect a pile of treasure, and then like later on someone comes along and puts some more treasure on the pile, the spectator will not attack you if you only take the things that are on the treasure pile that were added later. Those are not covered by its original contract, and it doesn't care about them at all. This leads to a fun idea where you could have some sneaky dungeon creature that knows there's a treasure hoard guarded by a spectator and just goes and puts all its loot on that pile, knowing that most people will be discouraged by the presence of the spectator, but that it can come and get them at any time because only it knows which ones are part of the original treasure hoard and which ones aren't. It also says that until you try to take anything from their treasure pile, spectators are completely chill. They're even friendly. And they'll tell you what's in the treasure pile, you know, so there's no confusion. They're honest and open and kind of likable. So you'll be going into this tomb, and the spectator will be like, "Oh, hi, guys. I don't get visitors down here very often. Nice to meet you." You'll be like, "Who are you and what are you doing?" And they'll say, "I'm a spectator. I'm guarding this treasure pile. It's got 45,000 gold pieces in, plus the blue jewel." And you'll go, "Wow, that's great. Well, like, you know, do you mind if we take it?" And he'll be like, "If you take it, it's cause serious wounds time. Don't you come near it. Don't you touch those gold pieces, you no good so-and-sos. Anyway, really nice meeting you, everybody." I think it's kind of charming. They're sort of like robots, right? In that they like very literally interpret their programming. But I feel like that encounter sounds fun, and I can see including it in a dungeon, almost like for a bit of light relief. And then, if you were really being clever, you could come up with a way to get around the spectator. Also, they have a horrible drooling mouth on their underside. The idea is that they, and I don't know if I read this wrong from just inferring it, but, you know, they cast create food and drink, the food and drink appears, and then they, like, lower themselves down and glum it up, right? So they kind of remain vertical, but the mouth is on the underside, so they can land on things and eat them. But Holloway's illustration of the spectator just makes this look absolutely gross. So I love that it's a gross thing that looks a bit like a beholder, but it's actually kind of friendly and cheerful, though not helpful at all, right? This is a restricted area. You can't come into a restricted area. If you come into the restricted area, I'm going to zap you. But if you don't, then have a nice day. I like that. So I started off thinking that spectators were kind of another piece of needless elaboration on a core monster concept, something that's not unusual in Monster Manual 2, and came away actually being pretty happy with them. So you guess if you're playing the home game, you can tick off James persuades himself to like a monster he didn't previously like on your checklist. In our next episode, we've got yet still more of this chapter to get through, so we're going to be pushing on through the S chapter of Monster Manual 2, here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.